So good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Webinar Wednesday from Sight and Sound Technology. Of course, we're now on a fortnightly schedule. It was 2 weeks ago since we were with you last, and we hope that you remain safe and well wherever you may be joining us today. My name is Stuart Lawler, and as always, it wouldn't be Webinar Wednesday without Carl Braley, my colleague, who joins us for another week. And we're looking forward today to an engaging session as part of World Sight Day, which actually takes place tomorrow. But we're starting World Sight Day early, and our marking of this significant date in the sight loss calendar throughout the world. And today we've brought a panel together to talk about technology and life, and what is great and what frustrates about technology. And we've just been having a really interesting chat here before we came on air, and our panel have lots of interesting things to say. And thank you to people who've sent in questions in advance. Now, speaking of questions and interaction, we'd love to hear from you today. So please do get in touch with us. You can do so on the Zoom meeting platform that we're all on by raising your hand if you wish to do that. Press Alt and Y if you're using Windows, Command and Y if you're using a Mac, or if you're on the mobile apps of Zoom, you can activate the raise hand button. Similarly, if you'd like to chat during the session today, press Alt and H on Windows, Command and H on a Mac, or activate the chat button from within your mobile app. And if you're doing so, please make sure you send your chat message to all panelists and attendees so that everybody in the session gets to see your message. Now, our colleague Carl Braley will be keeping a close eye on the raised hands and chat messages, and we will go to your chats and raised hands throughout the session. Okay, so we have brought a really great panel together. We've actually balanced it pretty much perfectly. Two ladies and two gentlemen, two from Ireland and two from the UK. I don't think we could have worked this better. If the gentlemen don't mind, I'm going to start. We're going to do ladies first. So Eileen Battersby is in Dublin, and she worked in social care before her deteriorating vision forced her to change direction. She now supports an active group of visually impaired people who are interested in using technology. Now, the group used to meet up regularly, but obviously COVID-19 forced Eileen to bring her group online and make sure that that group stayed connected. And looking forward to hearing from Eileen in a moment. And Eileen, thank you for joining us. Very welcome. Now, Victoria Alves is joining us from Longford, and Victoria came to Ireland at age 6 from Brazil. She not only had to learn English, but had to learn Braille as well in a mainstream school in rural Ireland, and she did so with huge success. She's a wonderful person, and she's starting this week her first year in Trinity College studying social work, and she is in the unenviable position, I suppose, of having this online learning during COVID, and we'll be talking about some of the challenges experienced with that as well. Paul Ribb presently manages an investment portfolio for a family office. He has been working in banking for over 30 years, and he's a visually impaired tennis player. And if you were at our sports and leisure webinar a number of weeks ago, you would have come across Paul already. And Paul, you're very welcome, and thank you for joining us. And last, but by no means least, Steve Tyler is Director of Assistive Technology at Leonard Cheshire Disability. He's worked in the accessibility and accessibility domain for over 20 years and has led on such innovations as the first accessible mobile telephones for visually impaired people, as well as web accessibility guidelines. And Steve has a wealth of knowledge around, I suppose, not just technology, but technology and usability and where we might be going with all this tech. So I'm really looking forward to chatting about that. So Steve, thank you very much. That's our panel. Absolutely delighted to have you all here with us today, and thank you for joining us. I'm gonna start with a question that came in actually from somebody from the audience, a member of the audience who emailed us a question, who was asking, how has your use of technology changed, or has your use of technology changed, I suppose, since the start of COVID? And maybe, have you relied on technology more, or how have you used it more, or used it in a different way? So we might just go around the panel and just see what people think about that. And Paul, I don't know if you might like to just kick us off on that.
Thanks, Stuart. And I have been very reliant on all of my home setup. Obviously, we're all confined to the barracks of home and no more traveling into offices and to board meetings. So the moment I got set up on Microsoft Teams and Zoom, to be honest, for me, I've really enjoyed that because that has meant that I'm in one place for all of my meetings. And I found it quite stressful sometimes traveling to various places for the meetings. And also I'm able to sit with my iPad and my computer and refer to the materials quite comfortably. Whereas when I'm in meetings, obviously I have to do a lot of preparation beforehand and it's difficult for me to be referring to material while I'm actually in board meetings. So I've actually found these adjustments to be relatively more comfortable for me. I use all of the other technologies in the home, the Alexas. I'm a very avid user of Siri as well on the iPhone. And I'm now back using Ubers as well, which I find incredibly helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say about travel and traveling to meetings. And, you know, if you get caught in traffic or you're trying to find out the easiest way to get somewhere, we don't have a lot of those challenges anymore. So definitely interesting observation.
I'm never late, Stuart.
Never late, as was shown today as well. Steve, has it been similar for you? Because I know you did a lot of traveling pre-COVID.
Similarly to Paul, I guess. As you might expect, I've been using technology of this kind for a long time. Of course, what's beginning to happen is that the shortcomings of the technology show up even more. There's the accessibility element, which is most important, I guess, to the disability community. And when that fails or doesn't work properly or doesn't work as expected, or the ongoing and horrendous sometimes updates and continual updates of operating systems and software and working with accessibility software, those things cause real issues. Unlike Paul, I think I went a bit stir crazy for a while. I really miss the social interaction that can't easily be delivered via the online system, good though they are. In particular, where you're kicking off new work or trying to make sure that people are on the same page as you are and getting a sense from the room, I guess, around how people are feeling about a proposition. I find that much harder to do online. But, you know, you kind of get with the program. You know, I rely much more on online shopping than ever before. I rely on online everything more than ever before. But I guess the highlight for me is the importance of accessibility, and it strengthens the arguments around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I think I'm a little bit like you occasionally in that just that mix missing, just maybe chatting to somebody or seeing someone face to face. And if you could have a little bit of both, that might be interesting. Victoria, how about yourself in terms of how you might have used technology differently since COVID?
I think, like everyone said, everyone's been using Zoom now. So Zoom's been a great one for meetings. But I started college this week. So I've been realizing some of how websites are not accessible and how Wi-Fi connections and being kicked out of lectures. And also for college, I suppose when you're in your first year, you want to meet people and make new friends, but that's kind of very hard over Zoom. You know, because if you're in college, if you're sitting beside someone, you can start talking to them and then you can get contact information, whatever. But once you're in Zoom, you're out of the class, you know, and that's it. So I think there is benefits as well, though, because you stay in the one place. Some lectures are recorded, so you don't have to listen to them the time they're set. But there's definitely benefits and challenges to everything being online now.
I think that bit about just, as you said, sitting beside someone in a lecture and being able to lean over or start a conversation, it's so difficult to do that, isn't it, when you're on a remote connection where, as you said, when Zoom ends, everyone just closes the browser and you're just sitting there on your own. Very different.
Yeah.
Eileen, how about yourself? What has the COVID been like for you in relation to technology?
Well, I suppose the major effect it has is when we couldn't actually have our club. We would have meeting every month anyway, but we couldn't have that club. So with yourself, thanks to yourself, we were able to bring the club online. But the problem is a lot of the people that I know that use technology are not really savvy with kind of Zoom or anything like that. So it's kind of a difficult situation, but it's getting there.
So I think you've raised a really interesting point, Eileen, and it's probably one that Steve, I know we've probably talked about this in the past before. I think you and I were speaking last time about, you know, there's so much technology, and yet there's people, in some ways I feel, and I've felt maybe more so since COVID, the people who needed it most didn't have access to it. There's almost this two-tiered system, and some of it is technology and some of it is broadband availability, and that it's an ongoing issue, isn't it?
The reliance, at heart, if you don't have connectivity, or if you've got very ropey connectivity, that kind of affects everything in the new world order. Then, of course, there's the comfort and use of technology, you know, and how people are, you know, how comfortable people are feeling using it. And I think now we're getting some sweeping, what sounds like sweeping.
Bear with me, Paul.
Yeah.
There's a weird noise coming from your end.
Oh, okay. Let me mute. Hang on.
It sounds like that's it. It goes. It sounds like someone's tearing paper.
So I think there is this inequity. And one of the challenges, of course, that we work with all the time at the moment is, as a rule, those people that are in most need and potentially could benefit the most, that's where the biggest issues are, either because the technology is more complex, more expensive, more tricky to set up, requires more support, or because, you know, they need that level of support to engage with it. When they get it, though, boy, is it transformational.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that's the point. If you can get the technology into people's hands, and obviously the training and the support, because Eileen and you probably, we would have come across this with your group.
Oh, yeah.
That people had technology, but they weren't really sure how to use it, so they couldn't really connect with you without a huge amount of challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I think the Alexa is one of the huge, you know, go-to things for people. It's an easy one, you know, it's the Echo. I think it seems to be the go-to one for most people. It seems to be one that they get.
Yeah. You know?
So that's another day's work again, isn't it?
Yeah, and Alexa is a great device. Mm-hmm. I'm going to just go for a sec to the whole idea of, because we all, obviously, we're all using technology all the time, all through the day.
I don't mean to interrupt. Your voice seems very quiet for your normal loud self and a few people in chat.
Sorry, my mic was moved. Sorry, is that better?
Well, now it's too loud. No, I'm joking. That's perfect.
Right, can't you see? Carl is always on the ball. Apologies about that. So I was just going to suggest, or just going to talk for a moment about where technology doesn't always work, because it's sometimes it seems to fail us when we need it most. And Victoria, you and I have been chatting this week about just all the, I suppose, the challenges you can have when you're, and again, you're in this unique position this year where you're trying to start a university degree online in this virtual space with no certainty of what's actually going to happen. What's that been like for you?
It's been interesting and difficult at times, you know. Because even with, if you want to do research for assignments, you have to book spaces in the library now. You can't just walk in. And also, like you were saying about Wi-Fi, I always seem to have relatively good Wi-Fi, but the moment I need it most, it seems to be kicking me out of every lecture I go to. So I think, yeah, just challenges like that.
And what about stuff like you've been using the Blackboard web-based learning system, VLE, I think they call them, virtual learning environments. What's that experience been like?
I honestly think, you know, obviously it would be better to be in a lecture, but with the screen reader, if you have it on, people are obviously sending chat messages in to talk to the lecturer, ask questions, and then it gets in the way of you actually finding the buttons to maybe raise your hand or interact. So yeah, there's issues there with accessibility as well.
Okay. I'm just going to remind people that if you want to raise your hand, you can do so with Alt and Y if you're on a computer, if you're on a PC, Command and Y if you're on a Mac, or press the raise hand button. And similarly, if you want to type in the chat window, Alt and H, PC, Command and H, H on the Mac, or you activate the raise, activate the chat option on your mobile device. Carl, do we have any? Oh, I see we have some raised hands.
We do now. I think. Yeah. Nicola Dixon.
Okay, we just need to
unmute yourself, Nicola.
Your text can be seen by panelists and other attendees.
Hi, Nicola.
Can you hear me?
We have you. How are you?
Oh, brilliant. Yes, I'm fine, thank you. Just sometimes when you press the unmute, it doesn't always unmute straight away. So just, okay. Anyway, it's not really a question. It's just something that I've found and thought might be helpful to people. I'm on the RNIB sort of mailing list. And they've sent it's a toolkit for people who can report problems with websites. It's how to go about it and who to contact and things like that. And I haven't actually looked at it myself yet, but it looked useful because we all come across websites where they're not as accessible as they could be or should be, or sometimes they're just not accessible at all, and it's very frustrating. And you think, well, what can I do about it without complaining? Well, not without complaining, but it's very easy to say, oh, this doesn't work. But very often you go to these people and they haven't a clue what you're on about because they haven't experienced the problems of being visually impaired themselves. So, you know, to be able to sort of point them in the right direction, I think will probably be a really good idea.
That's brilliant. I didn't know about that, Nicola, so thanks for telling us. Steve,
Stuart, more than ever before, yeah. I would say it's absolutely critical. If you come across inaccessible stuff, go for it. Whether it's contacting through RNIB or any of the major players around the table, I guess, or directly contacting the organisation responsible. They need to know that their stuff is inaccessible. More than ever, it matters in a way that I would say a lot of the time it's been choice before. There are various choices around what people can do and how people can act on things. Today, it's more than ever focused on online, and people need to know if they're not doing a good job.
And maybe, Steve, just maybe for a sec, if people... Because I think a lot of time people say, oh, that website doesn't work, or I can't use that website, but they find it difficult to explain why they can't use it. It's even enough, isn't it, just to make contact and say, this is not working for me. Then it needs to be investigated.
Right. And the magic words, if it's a website, simply point them to the Web Consortium or w3.org, the Web Consortium. There are guidelines. They are all publicly available. And they are all available to any technologist that wants them. And if it's an app or a piece of software, there are guidelines for any operating system you care to mention. So if it's an Apple, if it's on the iOS system, for example, or any of the Apple platforms, there are guidelines aplenty around what they ought to do. You don't need to know yourself how to make this stuff work. Just explain the issue. If you're a voiceover user or if you're a Zoom user or whatever it is, tell them what it is that you're using and how you're accessing it, but ask them to sort it out.
Okay, brilliant. I'm going to come back and we're going to come back in a few minutes and talk about smart homes and I suppose how these what's available in the kind of smart TV area as well. And Steve, I know you have some thoughts on that too. But just before we do that, let's go back to the raised hands, Carl. I think there's a few more.
We just have one at the minute.
Okay.
I'll just quickly do the chat in the box. From Norman Ogden, I was very disappointed in the online shopping at the start of lockdown in March. None of the supermarkets could be obliged. It is better now, but it was 5 months plus. I think that was pretty much the same for everyone, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I know that I think the RNIB were doing a piece of work on that. I'm not as familiar with that over here. We had a, but yeah, it was certainly similar challenges over here. There was space set aside within shops for, quote, vulnerable customers.
Our online system, yeah, they were running about 28 days behind.
Yeah, there was a
you couldn't get anything. But
there was a lot of waiting. Yeah, definitely.
It is definitely right. We're just going to go to one of the. So we've got Kate Risden. Kate, if you could just unmute yourself, please.
We've had Kate at a few webinar Wednesday events, I think. Hiya, Kate.
Hi, can you hear me?
We can. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine, thank you. Sorry, my computer keeps saying things to me. It's really off-putting. I've recently had experience of inaccessible websites. I was asked to do an online safeguarding child protection and education course because I teach at a Saturday morning music school. So that was by my local music hub. I did the course 3 years ago, and it comes in the form of a number of PDF files which you need to read and then answer a questionnaire on each one of them, so you proceed through. And it was fine last time. I had no difficulty with it. This time I managed just about to find the PDF file that I needed to read. I managed to read it, and then it said, you are now ready to complete the first questionnaire. Well, I couldn't find anywhere the questionnaire, so I got somebody to assist me with it. There's a chap you may all very well know, Tyra Technology, who's excellent, and he had a look, found the link, and then said, well, it's an interactive questionnaire and it's completely impossible to use it without speech. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, and so I checked with my hub manager, and she said, no, it is the same course as you did 3 years ago, but what they've done is made it look nice, updated it. So they got in touch. And there's been a sort of dialogue back and forth between Educare and the hub, and they say yes, it can be read with NVDA. They've checked, which is great. And they said, oh, last updated August this year. So I went back on, and sure enough, there's an update of August this year, which is to do with COVID, nothing to do with accessibility, and it's still inaccessible, and therefore I still haven't completed it, and I can't without, you know, going with somebody sighted, because it is literally impossible. But they don't seem to think, they reckon it is accessible and you can read the PDFs. Well, that's great. So I'm stuck, basically, and I have no idea where to go next. So it's just one of those outstanding things that hasn't been done.
So you can read them, but you can't.
I can read the files that you need to read to study the thing, to study each level, but you can't move on to the next level without having completed the first questionnaire. But the questionnaires themselves, which used to be absolutely fine, just you put your tick in the box or whatever, mm-hmm. and now they've made them so that they're interactive, so they move on screen, I think, is what the problem is. And now they're completely closed. So they've turned what was okay into something that now isn't, which is deeply frustrating.
Sure, and then you're trying to educate them to say this is not.
Yeah, and they just don't think, they aren't understanding the problem, because they think that it's been checked with screen readers, and they don't. So there's a communication break thing that they're not getting somehow, and I've got to go and have another email session with them, I think. But honestly, it's just like banging my head against a brick wall.
Steve, have you any thoughts around that? I mean, that sounds like a kind of a common issue, that, you know, this misunderstanding of what is accessible and what is not.
Very common. And hi, Kay, and drop us a line. steve.tyler@lenacheshire.org. I can help get through the mire if it's useful.
Thank you.
So sometimes it is accessible, but you've got to do things in weird and wonderful ways. Sometimes, of course, it's a mix of both. There's a bit of accessibility and not, and sometimes it's truly horrendous. I've recently been doing a piece of work looking at the way government, for example, there's a recruitment drive around trying to recruit more people in UK government with disabilities. And you know, some of it is fine. Some of it is truly horrendous, not least actually reading the stuff sometimes. So there are spreadsheet style or tabular data in one task that you've got to do, which literally takes about 20 minutes to actually get to the data you need to get to. The calculation you need to do takes about 90 seconds. But actually getting the data that you need and locating that, really, I think it goes right back to that message I gave before. I think we've really got to be strong about it and make people understand, because really, more than ever, this is a barrier now than more than it's ever been if it's not done right.
And recruitment websites, likewise, our online job applications. Oh my goodness. Just horrible.
Kate, thank you so much for your question. And
how do I mute myself back again?
I'll sort that out for you, Kate.
Thank you, Stuart. Carl, thanks.
Thanks a mil, Kate. Victoria, how is the, by the way, from a student's perspective, how did you find the whole registration for college? Those websites, were they okay? Was that process all right for you?
Well, we registered through the CAO, so like all that was done.
Yeah.
And they are accessible, but a lot of the college websites aren't accessible. And I think it's not a case of them not knowing, because they have a disability service and they're told about it. But it's,
I think when you're, and it, you know, it is the way it is when you're a student or when you're working, you have to be almost an advocate as well, and not everybody wants to be an advocate, but you almost have to keep banging the drum for what you need, you know, and it's really tricky. We'll come back to the raised hands in a sec. I want to talk a little bit about smart home tech, and this came in as a question from Mark and Bernadette Chanley, who are regular webinar Wednesday attendees. Thanks, Mark and Bernadette. And they're saying, my iPhone talks to me and has very good speech to text as well. And we all like what Apple have done. Of course, amazing things for people with sight loss and their accessibility options. It's extremely frustrating that there is no text to speech on television menus or landline phones or the majority of washing machines, heating thermostats, etc. Catch-up TV frequently has the audio description missing. I'd like to know, is this still legal under disability rights legislation, and which bodies are acting as pressure groups to make manufacturers and service suppliers do the right? Eve, I know that's a big area, and I know it's something that you've been that you are very much connected to.
It's a big question. I'll try to keep this short. To go for the last bit first. Which bodies are actively doing things? There are a range of standards bodies. I'm involved in a number of elements of it. RNIB is the port of call for some of this too. In terms of part of the trouble with this is keeping up to date with what there is out there and what there isn't. And more to the point, some of it is flakier than others. Some of it works for some people but doesn't work for others. But for my money, so just some very concrete responses. The user mentioned iPhone. So thermostats, Nest is fully accessible around thermostatic control. Hive is also good. And with Echo products or Amazon Alexa or Google products, that works a treat. Similarly, smart TVs, some work and some don't. The Samsung range at the moment is particularly good around menu access, electronic program guide access, and access to most of the functions there. Things like Fire Stick TV from Amazon, very nice accessibility features, not for everything, but certainly for the key features, especially Amazon Prime, and Apple TV, which you plug into your regular TV, very accessible. With respect to audio description, believe it or not, depending on where the customer is from, whether they're in the UK or not, I'm not sure. But we still are in the UK the best at delivering audio description. So it's far from perfect, but it's pretty damn good in relative terms. And there is more and more of it coming, including from other places too. So for example, If you sign up to the Disney streaming apps, they've got more and more audio description there. And in fact, they've dispensed with an audio description category on the basis that they're gunning for everything audio described. So the world is changing really quickly. There are a bunch of resources, and offline I can point you in the direction of those. But for all things Apple, for example, Apple Viz, if you don't know it, appleviz.com is a great resource for all things related to Apple apps and control mechanisms.
Okay. And definitely just over here, and I think we talked about this before on one of our webinars, that the E4 app, and Steve, I think you're correct about audio description in the UK. It's really good. But the E4 app over here in Ireland will work. There's no geo-blocking. The Apple TV version of the app is very accessible, and they have loads of audio description on that platform. Obviously, BBC is not available to us over here, but for those who can watch BBC in the UK, loads of audio description there as well. Okay, I got a quick question for Paul. I don't know if Paul is able to unmute.
Yep, I'm back.
So we got a question, Paul. A gentleman wrote in, I have a question for Paul for the session. Could you please recommend a website or company that provides good investment advice for individuals, which is also accessible and reliable? I suppose there's a couple of questions
there. Absolutely. Investment advice in itself is regulated. So what you have to be very careful about is who you talk to and who you give your money to. And that goes across the board. You know, we have to be on our guard, certainly when we're talking about our personal finances. My recommendation is there are a host of wonderful platforms to trade and to transact financial stock market trading on such platforms that are very accessible with software on your phone and computer. So trading platforms, if you know what you're doing, such as the SpreadX or CMC or RJ O'Brien or Hargreaves Lansdown, they all offer facilities for you to trade. But if you don't know what you're doing and you want investment advice, I would strongly advocate that you go to an independent financial advisor. They are regulated and their job is very personable. They get to know you, understand your risk, and take on board everything that you're trying to achieve with your finances. And it's that process that I would strongly recommend anyone doing, whether you can see or not, frankly, because trading and investing is, as you can imagine, particularly through COVID and the recession and the general volatility that we see across the different financial instruments, it makes for a very dangerous mix. And I would strongly recommend that you take professional advice to navigate through that.
Okay. Thanks for that, Paul. I hope that was of help to our questioner. Something else that came in here on this, and maybe, I don't know, Paul or Steve or indeed anybody who wants to comment on this, this is from John L. He says, why is it the world's biggest technology companies are reluctant to take on VI people? I myself have applied for over 1,000 ICT roles, and in one interview, I was basically laughed at. There needs to be drastic changes within the industry to accommodate all disabilities. Is it still challenging, do you think, for people to get jobs in these big mainstream sort of tech areas?
I would say that, yes, I would say so, sadly. I think there are big cultural changes happening in some companies, where some companies are beginning to take on and recognize the need for diversity in the company, because the argument goes, if you employ people with disabilities or from diverse backgrounds, etc., clearly you're representing the market that you're serving. And if the coder next to you is delivering something that you can't access, right there, that's telling a story. So things are changing. However, just two stats for you, I think, tell a million stories. One is 73% of people that lose their jobs today do so either as a result of a long-term illness or acquired disability. Right there, that tells you a story. The second is 23% of recruiting managers that were directly asked whether or not their take on a person with a disability, if all things were equal, said no. And they're the guys that dared to say no. Now, there, I think, is a massive cultural effort needed. You know, we talk a good game about RNIB being the fifth or very possibly the 50th now economy on the planet. In 2020, it's simply not good enough. The cultural change and the social understanding around a disability has to accompany the big changes that we've seen in accessibility and technology.
Yeah,
Stuart, I was just can I just add a couple of points and just following on from Steve, actually, there was a fabulous report by Accenture in America in 2019 that really extolled the virtues of disability employment. The sad news is that that comes off the back of effectively a full employment economy. So if you can imagine 2019, the world was really heading towards full employment, which meant that employers were being forced to look elsewhere for talent. And hey presto, the report from Accenture highlighted that the best untapped resource and almost the best kept secret in employment was disability. And they then went on to explain how much disability brings to the culture of companies who do dare to take on disabled employees, both culturally and resourceful, as we all know we are. In terms of what talents we bring. So there was a fabulous momentum move towards disability employment growing. And like Steve, I'm also familiar with a lot of the employment agencies really pushing back on disability, but they were starting to open up and have that conversation. COVID has really, to say it bluntly, has probably slammed the door back now, given the unemployment issues that we're now facing. So it is going to be a very challenging time for sure at the moment, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, increasing unemployment, and it's likely to be that way for some time. And this was the problem with COVID, is that nobody quite knows when it will end. So very hard to know what's going to happen. Okay. I just wanted to go back to Carl, if we have any chats or raised hands.
We have Geetha. Geetha, should be all yours. You can unmute yourself.
Okay, Dieter.
Yes, yes. Thank you very much. And Stuart, that was the question about investment was in fact mine. So thanks, Paul, for answering that. Now I have a couple of things to ask Steve. First of all, I do agree. I've been applying for civil service jobs, and I agree with Steve that certain areas are really ridiculously inaccessible. I mean, although things can be done, they could have been more straightforward and accessible. I was recently taking the verbal and reasoning test, and the test, I had to really struggle to figure out how to do it myself. And eventually I did, but they should ideally make it more straightforward and accessible. My second question is, for those websites that are not accessible, because I'm currently dealing with a company which has developed an expenses management software. The software is ideal for the organization that I'm trying to help, but unfortunately, it's not accessible in its original form. Now, when you come across those situations, are there any organizations that provide free consultancies, initial free consultancy for these companies? I mean, I'm sure you might say, well, they should be able to pay for these consultations. But one of the motivations for them to make things more accessible would be to, first of all, know what's not accessible. I mean, I can, of course, tell them from my perspective as to what is not accessible. But it would be useful if an accessibility professional could assess the website and tell them, point them out everything that's not accessible. Does any organization do that?
Steve, do you?
I would approach RNIB. So normally RNIB, for example, will do an initial evaluation to just understand for itself, if nothing else,
what the challenges are, and then it moves into a consultancy thing. I'd also maybe talk to AbilityNet. They're another organization that does similar kinds of work. The majority of organizations charge in the end, but certainly will take a look at something to at least establish the scale of accessible challenge.
Okay, that's useful. I mean, I was aware of AbilityNet and the RNAV, but they do charge. But I can approach them for an initial consultation. Yeah, thank you. And also, I think you, Steve, you were the one who campaigned to have Braille on our medicine packs. Is that correct?
That's right, yes.
Yeah. Well, that was brilliant. I mean, whenever I read Braille on a medicine pack, I think of you. So that was excellent.
I will as well from now on. Brilliant. I didn't know that. Thank you for that, Peter. Thanks a million for the question. Steve, could I ask you one of the things I wanted to just to ask you maybe to reflect with us maybe for a sec, because we all nowadays take our mobile phones for granted, and you know, we just take for granted that they're going to be accessible. And I remember when we didn't have I'm old enough to remember when we didn't have accessible mobile phones. I remember holding a Nokia communicator for the first ever time that spoke when someone sent me a text, and I found it quite sort of overwhelming. But can you just tell us about that? What was it like getting that technology into people's hands?
Oh, goodness. It was like there were a lot of people involved. I mean, really, I was the architect of a partnership. The trigger, what we were finding was that no one was paying any attention. So there it was, all of the mainstream marketing was, you know, 80% or 85% of people were now beginning to adopt mobile phones, and we still didn't have an accessible solution. And I knew that it was possible to do it. And the big players at the time, Nokia and Ericsson, and nobody wanted to do it. And they were all telling us how impossible it was. So in the end, we put out a call to action for software engineers, and we eventually pulled together a grouping which included a guy called Torsten Brand, who was a fantastic guy, and Marcus, software guy originally from Nokia, and they'd hacked into the Nokia ecosystem and delivered this prototype and said, look, I think I've got something. What do you reckon? And then we set about setting up a partnership with Vodafone and a range of other stakeholders, and brought about the first version of Synthetic Talks. And it was incredible. And if you now, thinking back to those days, it's very, very odd, because, you know, we were talking a game that nobody really understood. There was I saying things like, you know, in the coming years, not only will it be a device that you carry about in your pocket to communicate to people with, but it will be able to control the environment around you. It will be able to. And if we get the accessibility right on these things, we're in business, you know. But it was very, very difficult. But the breakthrough moment, when these things became genuinely available to people, I think there was shock and surprise. And as with all of these new developments, the VI community and disabled people themselves didn't know what they were missing in a lot of cases. And I find this all the time in any new development. Actually, the consumer group you're trying to get access, we're very good as a disability community in making do and mend, basically. That's what we do. We kind of get, but we find weird and wonderful ways of making the world around us accessible. And so quite often when someone comes along and says, oh, you could make your life easier, a lot of the response is, really? Well, I don't know. I've coped okay all of my life. I mean, why would I want something new? But this was a game changer, I would say.
Yeah, and I often think, Steve, I think it's important to reflect on this every so often, because I really honestly believe we would not have the accessibility in the mainstream mobile phones that we have today were it not for what happened, I guess, almost 20 years ago. I think it's just really important to keep that in mind.
And if you think about for me, the disability community more than ever before has to come together and collaborate. And the reason I say that, so for me, the big big game changers. So if you think about, you know, Alexa is a great example. So I led on the development of Ivona text-to-speech with Ivona, a little Polish company, and the objective was to bring synthetic speech to Kindle and Amazon, and then the rest is history. What came out of that was Alexa and Echo, and what we would now call an accessibility, you know, if it was developed 7 or 8 years ago, it would have been a specialist accessibility device. Today, it's a mainstream smart home, smart device that delivers all sorts of things, all powered by that thing. And the importance of high quality speech was not lost on Amazon, because that's what made the difference. Those big strategic decisions and game changers, I think we need more of that in the disability community.
Okay, very, very, very much so. Thanks for that, Steve. I think it was just important to put that in context and where we've come from, I suppose, to where we are today. I just want to remind people again that you can chat with, if you wish, on the chat with Alt and H, or you can raise your hand with Alt and Y if you'd like to ask a question. We have about 10 minutes before we're going to sort of wrap up, but I would like to go around the panel and just ask each of you, what are you missing? What do you wish technology would do for you, maybe that it's not doing for you at the moment? There could be something that is maybe frustrating you, or that you just wish a piece of technology would do. So we might just quickly go around the panel to get a few thoughts on this. Would we like to start with the ladies again? Eileen, I know I haven't come to you in a little while. Is there anything you would badly like a piece of technology to do for you? Oh, I'm not sure if we have Eileen anymore.
Sure, yeah, I'm here.
Oh, you're there. Sorry.
I think the piece of technology that I see coming on stream is the, you know, these virtual kind of glasses that kind of you can see from the distance, and, you know, kind of that brings that, because I things have to be, I've good sight to the end of my nose, so things have to be that near me to see them. So I think it's something that could make things far away nearer you. Something, you know, there has to be something good out there. I mean, there is things that do it, but I'd like to see it better.
Okay, so something that would be widely available in the form of glasses that would, yeah, and there are lots of exciting things, I think, in that space.
Yeah.
Victoria, is there what are you missing from technology that you just wish you could have?
I mean, I'm starting college now, obviously, so I think there's a lot of things that aren't accessible, so just if they were, just apps, you know, just normal apps you download, if they could just be accessible, instead of, you know, having to download specialist apps where you'd be like, this is accessible, download this one. If you could just download one that works for everyone, that'd be great.
So this whole idea of going to the app store, finding something, saying, oh, I'll get this, and then you find it's inaccessible or blank screen or something that's not labeled.
Yeah.
Very frustrating. Paul, what are you missing? What are you yearning for from your tech?
Oh, goodness. I mean, firstly, I'm very grateful for the amazing advancements that have happened over the last 5 years, because I remember how expensive everything was, you know, many years ago. And even today, I now, you know, don't need my Zoom tech, sadly. I've just gone into Microsoft 365, which has got all of the facilities and functionality that I was using on Zoom text. So I'm very comfortable with everything that we've got now on the iPhone and the iPads and the TVs, etc. What I hanker after, and I think it's what Steve was mentioning, is I look at some of the futuristic movies, and I would love to have the Terminator software vision installed into my brain so that I can see as well as is possible through the eyes of artificial intelligence, I guess, is what I'm looking at. And when I look at what's happening in Silicon Valley with some of the biotech companies and the med tech companies, and those, you know, sort of moving on from Google Glasses. So some of these incredible AI glasses that are working in concert with your body. I think some of those designs look incredible, and I can't wait to get my hands on some of that stuff.
Fantastic. Thank you, Paul. And Steve, what are you hankering after? What's missing in your world of tech?
Agree with all of the comments that have been made. And if, to Paul's point, you want a really eloquent description of where technology is going, you could do worse than do a Google search for Stephen Fry, Bell Nokia Laboratories. And there is a lecture that he gives. And if you want the link, you can contact me and I can send it more directly to you. But it's a brilliant, it's an hour and a bit of your life, but really enlightening and fascinating stuff around where the world is going. To answer the question, apart from agreeing with everybody else, I would say navigation is critical certainly for the visually impaired community. The use of profile technology and making disability access easier and handing off requirements to travel agencies and all of this business, hugely important.
Have we lost Steve, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, we may have lost Steve there for a second. I think Steve, there you go, you see, we all have technical glitches. Okay. But I think that lecture with Stephen Fry, definitely worth us all Googling. Mm. I think we'll all be watching that. Okay, let's go back to, I think there's a few raised hands. I saw a few popping up.
Just going to go through a couple in the chat box. Chloe Phillips, does anyone find a particular app or online work organizer platform such as Trello or Messenger accessible?
Well, Microsoft Teams is pretty good.
I'm back, sorry.
Organization. Oh, Steve, you're back, sorry. We were just, somebody was asking about Trello, any accessible messaging apps, work-related messaging apps, and we were just mentioning Teams. I haven't used Trello.
No, I haven't.
Teams is definitely a good one, though, if you want to check that one out and updating regularly.
Excellent. We've got Nanette has asked, can we have some more information about new technologies that have been developed post-COVID or new ways that tech is now used?
Well, anything being developed, I suppose, developed at the moment, I think there's probably innovations going on all the time. Is there anything that's being developed at present, Steve, or that's kind of that anything happening?
The bit where you lost me, or where I lost you, more to the point, was I was saying white goods are behind the curve in a big way, and things like the navigation technology is behind the curve for us as a disabled community, and notion of profiles and being able to hand that kind of stuff off to people. I would say, though, that there are some, as smart home developments happen and connectivity, there are more and more options. So the very latest, which is a sort of bridge, I suppose, there is a new Miele accessible washing machine, which has just been launched. And I think finally, some of those technologies are beginning to see the light, but it's a really slow process. The other thing to look out for, by the way, is the kind of stuff coming out of driverless vehicles and vision technology. So a lot of this stuff is being driven by camera technology that's embedded in cars, and the costs around those are dropping massively. But it means that software engineers and coders and so on are getting their hands on this stuff and beginning to make real changes.
Are we far, Steve? I know we're really gazing into the future now, but just when you mentioned driverless vehicles, I think it's one of the things that lots of us, and maybe those of us who've been blind from birth in particular, maybe it's the one thing I wish I could get into a car and bring Carl for a drive, and I'd get him back home safely, I promise. But are we, do you think we're, you know, is it hard to say, are we far from that day?
About where we are with them?
Yeah.
Goodness me. I've had the pleasure and so on of driving in a Google car completely independently. The work still to do is quite major with the current state of technology. But in reference to the Stephen Fry kind of agenda, the Stephen Fry lecture, the speed of development is exponentially increasing year on year. So they had this ambition that driverless vehicles would be available by 2019, that kind of thing. What we're seeing are a level of autonomy. So now on a motorway, your car will stay in lane. It will tail cars behind it and not let you, it will brake if they brake, and these kind of things. There are guarantees in some of the vehicles that are on the road right now that say, if it's a warm-blooded being, a pedestrian, and you're traveling at 28 miles an hour or less, we guarantee not to hit them. And so it's coming on, but we've still got a way to go. I would say what I hope, like you, is it's in our lifetime. I'm hoping the next 10 years we'll see it.
Okay, we'll do a webinar Wednesday from a driverless car, and Carl can manage the webinar. I'll drive the car.
Yeah, you can. I'm not going anywhere.
Okay, let's go back to the raised hands. I know there's a few people, I think, waiting to ask questions.
Right, Tina, it's all yours. If you can just unmute yourself.
Can you hear me?
Hiya, Tina, how are you?
It's a couple of suggestions, actually, as opposed to questions. One thing is, because just saying about Braille on medication, only thing I will say, for those of you that want to actually be able to read it, when you collect it from the chemist, please ask your pharmacist not to stick the label on the Braille, because that's what happens to me sometimes.
Good point, because when you try to remove the label, it takes the dots. Yeah.
But, and the thing is, it's a brilliant idea. So would it be possible to try and, I don't know where to go, or who, maybe Steve, because he mentioned about the Braille on the prescription, the medication, to have Braille on cleaning products and other things? Because I know the co-op put Braille on some of their products, or have Braille on products, and Patterson Shortbread Fingers, they have Braille on them. So it'd be good, it'd be brilliant, and then visually impaired people will find it a bit easier to do their own shopping then, if they want to go shopping on their own rather than having to rely on a sighted person to say, okay, this is the Comfort, and this one's Lenore, or this one's bathroom cleaner, and things like that,
Okay, thanks, Tina. Great, great suggestions, definitely.
The other thing is, it'd be good, I know it's not always possible to get instructions in one's preferred format when buying equipment and things. It'd be good if it was more available, when you buy something and say, oh, yeah, we can provide instructions for you, but the only they're not in Braille or whatever. And there is another issue. The NHS do not always send you information in Braille when you have requested it.
I've long thought, just as a comment on the Braille on instructions, I've long thought there's a business in that. That at the moment, because even if you do get them in quotes accessibly, in other words, they're readable electronically, what often a VI person wants to know is, they'll refer to logos or display the logo, press this logo button to do X. And of course, you want a descriptor of that. So it does take some work, but I think there is a real potential there for somebody to rattle cages and to make that happen.
Yeah, because I'm visually impaired and I'm also hard of hearing, deaf, hard of hearing. So I always prefer Braille as my preferred format, if possible. Although I do have two hearing aids and they do help. And I do use Lady A. I won't mention her name because she might respond. The Echo Dot from Amazon. And the other thing is, I do miss her going the more up-to-date ones, because the older ones, they go when you say her name. Well, the up-to-date ones don't do that, and it'd be good if they did a little ping or something so you could still know whether she's actually heard you or not.
Yeah. Okay, thanks, Tina. Great questions and great suggestions. And who knows, at the pace of things, way things are moving, we could definitely see some changes in the not too distant future, I hope.
I'd point you to by the way, for those who are not engaged with this, especially on the iPhone at the moment, but a whole host of other technologies on the Microsoft platform and so on, are doing image recognition. And some of that is really very spectacular. And you can see it's by no means done and dusted yet at all, but it's getting very, very intelligent.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for that, Steve. Any more hands, Carl?
Yeah, we do have a few hands and a few questions still. So
okay.
Let me just... No. Oh, there we go. Ian Lackey.
Regular webinar Wednesday attendee. Hi, Ian.
Hello.
How are you, Ian?
A couple of points. You should be able to get your newer Echo to make a noise when you say the wake pod. But it's interesting, the technologies haven't moved. I, for example, have not used a radio for about 5 years because the most successful radio is an iPhone. Since the Sonos talking DAB radio ceased, there's just been no point. An iPhone or an iPad or whatever is the most accessible radio you can want. And secondly, this problem of specialist equipment, I'm sure that this washing machine that Steve, I think it was, mentioned, is a fine piece of kit. But I mentioned to a sighted person that you had to pay about £800 for it, and they laughed. You know, why should we have to pay £800 for a washing machine? And
on that, Ian, the £800 price tag is a Miele price tag. You'd pay £800 for a Miele machine, full stop. It happens to be that Miele have adopted this. And to your general point around specialist technology versus mainstream, I'm absolutely with you in principle that there needs to be more mainstream access. I'm also, though, acutely aware that, in fact, the hosts of this call are procurers, sellers of specialist product. And the trouble that we've got at the moment is, if we're not careful, that really specialist knowledge around what it is to translate an interface into genuinely usable product is still not, but there are some notable exceptions, and the iPhone is one of them. If you're au fait with touchscreens and whatever, and you're prepared to invest in the learning curve, which a lot of people are not, by the way. But regardless of all of that, I think the knowledge is even scarcer than it was around specialist interfaces and how to bring about real access to people. And I think we've really got to watch that at the moment.
But we've also got to make sure that accessibility becomes a mainstream thing. For the past year, I've been struggling to get an accessible in-home display for a smart meter. We've just got one. But why should I, as a blind person, have to ask for something special, when what should happen is that there should be accessibility in every in-home display, which you can switch off or switch on if you want it. Because what's happening now is, because we've got to be special, it puts the cost up, people don't know about it, and we have the trouble I've had for the past year, and to some extent I'm still having, because it's not part of the mainstream.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and I think one of the things, Ian, just to mention that we're spending a bit of time doing here at Sight and Sound, and this is an ongoing piece of work, is just trying to work out where our technology and mainstream tech can better merge, and I suppose develop our own knowledge on the broader mainstream things like smart homes and you know, smart meters, for example, and to work out how we can provide solutions for people in that regard as well. So I think it's something that's on a lot of people's radar. And you're right, I think accessibility needs to be part of everybody's way of thinking. And I think we are going there slowly. So thanks very much for your question.
Thank you.
Carl, are you ready to move on to the next person?
Yeah. On a momento. We have, please forgive me for my pronunciation, Bluji.
So Bluji, if you want to unmute
yourself.
Give
her that, Stav. Should be there.
You might just need to unmute yourself.
I think they have.
Oh, hello, Bluji.
Hello. Oh.
Don't think
I'm going to just pop you off the talking for a moment. I'm just going to quickly boss you a couple of these. There's more statements, I guess, than questions. You've got one from Bilal Ansari. Whoever campaigned for the banknotes to be browed is also a legend. I'm just going to boss through these quickly. This paying for them. Can we?
I just say about the banknotes that obviously in Ireland we still don't have them, but I went to Canada and all their things have like Braille on them. It's so cool.
Victoria, I believe, and I don't, because I have not really noticed these, supposedly on the euros there are marks, but they're only visible on the very, very new notes.
Oh yeah, I saw them before, but the ones in Canada are actually Braille, it's just more nicer to read.
Yeah. Okay.
Hang on 2 seconds. Paul Leake, organizations need to be aware that information needs to be given in text format as opposed to image files, which are unusable by blind and visually impaired people, whether documents are short or lengthy. These are going back quite a way, 20 odd minutes. I do apologize. Everyone was getting engrossed in what they were doing, so I was just letting them carry on. Is there tech like Google specs that can identify people that you encounter and are reliable? Well, I can kind of answer that one. As long as you know the person, Orcam My Eye will actually scan their face and pick their faces up when they're approaching from within 15 feet away. So, yes, there is something, and it is very reliable for what it does. The downside to that is you're looking at about £3,500. Keith Morton has asked for the link for the Stephen Fry lecture, if you wouldn't mind that. Danny Grant just said, I would like some technology that would be able to read, enable me to read comics. That's one that you don't ever think about, really, isn't it?
I would not have a clue. But just in relation to the Stephen Fry lecture, we'll send for anyone who registered for this session today, we'll issue that in the next webinar Wednesday email that goes out. So anyone who wants can watch that. Sounds like it's great. I'm going to have a look at it as well. So thanks to Steve for sending that on.
Alexandra Nagoita just said, why don't we get the big influencer Molly Burl to get involved?
Molly, I perhaps to my shame, I have to say, who is Molly Bell?
It's not just you.
She's a YouTuber.
Oh, thank you, Victoria. See, I knew Victoria would help us out.
I have been watching her over a few years, and what made her get very popular was this guy on YouTube called Shane Dawson, or used to do makeup, and he'd be like, blind girl does my makeup, blind girl does this, blind girl does this. So basically she got popular, and she is on Twitter, so I suppose if someone ever wants to start a campaign and just at her, it could work, who knows.
Well, I do know who she is now, actually. Yes.
Okay, maybe we will. Maybe we will chat to her and see if we can ask her to come on to a session and talk to us. Thanks, Victoria. I do remember you mentioned her to me now, actually. I didn't realise it was.
No, I think I may have actually sold her something not that long ago. And I've just realised who it is.
There you go. Okay. Any other comments, Carl, in the chat?
I haven't been able to access. Baluji's had a problem. I haven't been able to access Eventbrite. Have any of you used the website? It's important as I run run the Inner Vision Orchestra consisting of 20 blind people.
Wow.
We had issues with Eventbrite anyway, didn't we? Initially.
Yeah, Eventbrite is it's one of those funny things where I suppose it's like so many things nowadays. It's a web-based application. And there's lots of things going on with dynamically changing content all the time on the pages. But actually, it's not something I have used for a little while myself. But yes, we did have issues with it in setting up events here at Sight and Sound not so long ago. So there may be something with it that I'm just not aware of. I'm going to just really briefly, by way of trying to bring this to a close, and I want to thank all our panelists, by the way, because it's been a really interesting, engaging conversation, and I think we've really gone in an interesting. We've covered some really interesting tech, but maybe just to end off, to ask each of you, the technology that you have now, is there anything that really frustrates you, I suppose, or something that it's not doing, or a shortcoming? And I suppose it's kind of a little bit linked to the question about that we asked earlier about what would you like to see in the future in your technology, your technology usage. But is there anything at the moment that you're using day to day that really frustrates you? And for me, and I might just start this going to give you a real world example, I've found I've had to use the camera more lately on my phone because of COVID, I suppose, and trying to contact people and asking for a little more help when I can't see people face to face. And I find it, I have very poor spatial perception. And I used to think that was just because I was totally blind. I don't actually think it is. I think I just have bad spatial perception. And I find I would love something that would be able to give me more audible feedback as I was moving the camera. So when somebody says to me, bring the camera down 2 inches, it's very difficult for me to understand what that is. So that's been my challenge with technology lately. And I wondered if any of the panel have anything that is frustrating them at the moment about the tech that they're using at this time.
Can I just say, I know you said you want technology. I know the iPhone has a thing that, like, when you center the camera, it says camera centered and stuff. And it's, I think, in its early stages still, because it's not the best, but it works.
Okay, brilliant. Is in the Photos app or
just on the camera? Like, if but that's only if you're going to take a photo. But I mean, I know what you mean. If you're on a call, it could. That's something that they could probably look at.
The people who I talk to regularly now, who have been kind of given, you know, doing bits with me, now get used to just saying, no, go up slightly, up very, very more, very more, slight, stop. So it's kind of working. It's working now.
Yeah.
We have this funny way of doing it. But thanks for that, Victoria.
No problem.
Paul, is there anything that's frustrating you at the moment about your tech?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I struggle with the battle between Google and Apple calendars because I've got a myriad of email accounts and work related stuff. And so when I click on things, sometimes it goes into the Apple calendar, sometimes into the Google calendar. And I'm constantly trying to sync these things and figure out why things are disappearing on me. But I have to, you know, put my hands up and applaud the iPhone because it really, for me, has been a massive game changer over the last few years. The iPad and the iPhone have been life changing. So for all the frustrations, you know, we have to, as Steve will always say, nothing's ever going to be perfect, but we have to applaud the progress that has been made. Because although we argue that things are moving slowly in certain areas, and I feel the pain that some of the callers are having in life experiences, we have to also take a step back and just realize how far and rapidly we've come over the last 5 years. And for that, I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah, and it almost feels, doesn't it, each year that we're getting further. You know, I know sometimes things break and we slip back a bit, but in general, we're moving further, moving faster. Obviously, this year might be slightly different. But thanks for that, Paul. Steve, is there anything that's driving you crazy at the moment that you're battling?
It's related to Paul's thing, actually. I share that pain around the various different platforms and calendars and goodness knows what else, and trying to make them merge and just bog standard things like synchronizing contacts and all of this. But for me, a really big issue that again is coming to the fore even more than it ever was, because we're all doing online things and those of us are engaging with it, are the bog standard everyday products that keeps your PC healthy. So virus checkers, you know, those kind of back-end system things that no one really wants to mess with too much. But actually, the majority of those are pretty inaccessible and unbelievable, really, given that they've been with us for such a long time, ever since the advent of Windows in particular. But a lot of them are not great in terms of user experience, and they need to be fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. Victoria, anything frustrating you at the moment, driving you crazy?
Like I said, different apps, they say, oh, download this app so you can read this book or do this, but the app isn't accessible. And it's like, why do you have to have this accessible app? Why can't all apps just be accessible from the get-go, you know?
Mm-hmm. And Eileen, anything for you that's making life difficult at the moment with technology?
Life is getting very difficult for me because my poor iPad is now 8 years old and has lost one of the bulbs, so it's kind of not doing everything for me as usual. But I think I'm good getting 8 years out for that. My frustration at the moment.
I think you've done very well getting 8 years out of it. Yeah, very good. Okay. Listen, I want to thank everybody for a really great session. Victoria, Eileen, Paul and Steve, thank you sincerely, each of you, for your time and expertise and the great conversations that we've had today to start our celebration of World Sight Day, which takes place tomorrow. There'll be lots of more things coming on Sight and Sound social media tomorrow. So follow us on Facebook and Twitter, both in the UK and here in Ireland, if you want to find out what we're up to tomorrow. Webinar Wednesday is back in 2 weeks' time. We look forward to catching up with you then. So as always, thanks to Carl for managing all our chats and raised hands so well, as always. And we look forward to catching up with everybody in 2 weeks. For the moment, stay safe and stay well.
Can we just say one thing, Stuart, just before you cut it off? To all those guys that did send questions into the chat box that we didn't get round to, if you want to just send an email to sales@sightandsound.co.uk, if you put for the attention of Stuart and myself, we'll get round and see if we can get them answered for you.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, great idea. So if anyone wants to follow up, if there's something you haven't had an answer to, send it into sales. If it's a hard question, put it in for the attention of Carl. If it's easy, put it for the attention of Stuart. Okay? Just do it that way. Thanks to our panelists again, guys. We really appreciate your attendance today. And we'll talk to everyone in 2 weeks.